I knew that was going to cut me off. Welcome to the Manitoba Bar Association's Joint General Practitioner Section and Law Practice Management Professional Development Webinar entitled Coaching Your Team, Using Coaching to Motivate, Engage, and Inspire Staff and Colleagues. My name is Melissa Tanhill, and I am the Section Coordinator of the MBA. Before we get started, I'd like to advise everyone that all phone lines are open right now to hear the presenter and to allow for questions at the end of the presentation. This means that everyone on the call, presenter and attendees alike, can hear you. It's very important that you keep your phone lines as quiet as possible during the presentation, and we ask that you press star 6 to mute your line. It does seem, though, that as people were logging in, that they were pressing mute by star 6ing, so that's great. But please make sure you do not put us on hold. We will all be able to hear any music or beeping that comes along with your hold system, and this will interrupt the presentation. If you would like to ask the speaker a question during the presentation, please type your question in the chat box on the left side of your screen. You could choose who you would like to send the question to. It could be a question that everyone sees or a private question that only the speaker can see. To do so, you just click on the small icon on the right side of the chat box. A drop-down box will open where you can choose to send a private question to the presenter, or you can send it to everyone. And please note that the default is to everyone. So you can see what that looks like. There we are. We will also allow for verbal questions after the presentation. If you have a question for the speaker that you would like to ask over the phone during this time, please remember to unmute your phone before the question, and you do that by pressing star 7. Also, if you can see on the left-hand top corner, there's a handout that accompanies today's session. You did receive it with your login information, but we put it there just in case you don't have it in front of you. You can click download and save the PDF file onto your computer. Just a reminder for anyone logging in late, please be sure to press star 6 to mute your phone, and then at any question time, you can press star 7 to unmute. Great. Thank you very much. Now I'd like to introduce our speaker. Patrick O'Reilly is founder and owner of PADREG Coaching and Consulting, Inc., certified in executive coaching and specialized in helping leaders of people excel in their roles and dive into new roles. Until 2008, Mr. O'Reilly was a senior executive with the Government of Canada, leading significant initiatives and teams of people in several key departments, including the Privy Council Office, Public Safety Canada, Indian and Northern Affairs, and Canadian Heritage. He held numerous senior roles, including Director General of Strategic Planning and Citizen Engagement for Public Safety, Director of Portfolio Operations for Canadian Heritage, advising the Minister of Canadian Heritage on all aspects of the cultural, heritage, broadcasting, and film portfolio, and finally, Canada's chief federal negotiator for the creation of the Canadian Museum for Human Rights, the first new Canadian national museum in over 40 years and the first outside the national capital. Since starting PADREG Coaching and Consulting, Mr. O'Reilly has devoted himself to helping executives and senior leaders in corporations and government, healthcare, insurance, cultural organizations, universities, broadcasters, and many others to achieve greater clarity of vision, greater success in their day-to-day business, and stronger teams of senior leaders. And now I'll turn it over to Patrick. Thanks, everyone, for participating in today's webinar.
Thanks, Melissa. I appreciate the introduction and appreciate the invitation to be here. Can you hear me okay? Okay, great. Super. Well, thanks a lot. As Melissa said, I came to Winnipeg a number of years ago, when I first negotiated the creation of the Human Rights Museum. I then came out here to act as the CEO of that organization for a number of years. And then when I left there, I decided to stay in Manitoba. I'd grown up on the prairies. I grew up in Saskatchewan. And so this kind of felt like coming home when I came back here. And I decided this would be a great place to start my own business. And so that's what I'm doing now, and having a tremendous amount of fun with it, really working with a lot of the senior leaders that I got to know when I first moved out here, as well as many new people, and helping them really bring the best that they can possibly bring to their leadership and their teams. And we're going to talk a little bit about that today and how I do that and some of the fun I have with them and seeing them succeed. So as Melissa said, we'll be happy to take questions at the end, but there's also that chat window, and Melissa has promised she'll keep an eye on it for me and let me know if any questions pop up. So I'm going to dive right in here and talk a little bit about, I want you to just imagine for a moment, I'm sorry if you can hear that bit of a dog barking in the background outside my office here, it's odd. I want you to imagine just for a moment a world where you're working with colleagues and staff and other lawyers and maybe clerks, paralegals, all of those that I've listed there, who are really helpful, really engaged, and really committed to the same goals as you. Now, some of you might already have that in your workplace. You may find that you are working with people who are really committed to the same ideals. And I'm willing to guess that some of you find that you got that from time to time, that there's probably people in your office who are like that. But if that isn't always the case, my question to you would be, what would you be willing to do to make that happen? You've probably found, I would guess, that some of your colleagues, your partners, your associates, your team members, they're just not motivated to bring success to the firm the way you are. Or, you know, maybe even from time to time, you found that you're the one who's just not that motivated to get engaged with some of the things that you need to get engaged with. So we're going to talk today about one way to fix that, and one way that I think is really key. So before we get to that, let's talk a little bit about what motivates us, what motivates people in the office. As Melissa alluded, I've managed people most of my career, and I've worked in teams, frankly, all my life. And if you had asked me what motivates someone at work, I would have probably told you things like, you know, a good salary, maybe having a spiffy title, and of course, who doesn't think that maybe a nice bonus every now and then, a big bonus is motivating. As a leader of people, I had learned back in those early days about needing to have carrots and sticks and the right balance to motivate people. But in my gut, I knew that was too simplistic. And my own experience during that time in managing people started to disprove that theory for me. My anecdotal experience and my own observations about trying to motivate people with financial rewards and promotions and titles and all of those things that I tried over the years was that those rewards kind of become an expectation for baseline performance instead of actually improving performance. Frankly, the number of times I've heard people complain, you know, about their bonus payment, that it's not big enough, it didn't come soon enough, frankly, I've lost count. And so it's a little baffling that something that we think motivates us and drives us, those big bonuses, actually end up resulting in complaints and really just driving day-to-day behavior. So, you know, there's a book out there that some of you may have read called Drive, The Surprising Truth About What Motivates Us. Daniel Pink, who's a bit of a leadership guru, wrote this, and he helped me along the way kind of see what really does motivate a lot of us in the workplace. The book talks about the evolution of motivation, and it goes from, you know, those early days of sort of the survival instincts and the carrot and the stick to a more recent form that the author calls motivation 3.0. And for him, it replaces carrots and sticks with values and purpose. And what was interesting to me was the proof that carrot and sticks don't work, especially in work that is complex, that requires creativity, or that requires problem solving. Pink's work demonstrated that the short-term motivators actually tend to reduce creativity, and they foster really short-term thinking, which, of course, often comes at the expense of long-term results. So in reality, what he found really motivates people in those workplaces, like a law firm where the problems are complex and people need to be creative, is autonomy, the desire to direct our own lives, mastery, the urge to get better and better at something that matters, and purpose, to do what we do in the service of something bigger than ourselves. So, since leaving the world of government and the corporations and starting my own company, and as I said, you know, I get to work with a lot of talented leaders and help them reach success, I've had a chance to test this theory a little bit by diving into it with my clients and exploring with them what really gets them going. And I've really come to believe that Pink has it right. So first of all, I highly recommend reading that book if you get the chance to gain a little background on this. We're going to keep flying through it here. But the book applications I found really extend beyond the business world. So some of you may find it kind of interesting in other areas of life like exercise, personal well-being, even parenting. I'll give you a little hint. The book says to parents, don't give your kids pocket money for chores, and he gets into a little about why that's demotivating. So our goal then for today is, you know, to go beyond that question of motivation. And you might be thinking, why a webinar on coaching? You know, you're lawyers. When might you have an opportunity to coach people? Well, it comes down to that motivation. Helping the people around you find their motivation and helping them make it happen will help them and you achieve greater things. So, you know, I looked at the list of all of you attending, and I'm speculating that some of you manage people directly. You maybe have a receptionist in your outer office or an assistant, or some of you maybe even own a firm with a team of lawyers, or you're the managing partner within your firm. We're going to talk about lots of opportunities for those of you to coach people and really what it means for your business's bottom line. But you're probably also wondering, what if you're not in any of those situations? Will this be useful to you? And, you know, my proposal to you is that we all manage relationships at work, and bringing a coach approach to those relationships will help those relationships succeed. Now, notice I said at work. I'm not going to talk today about managing a relationship with your husband or your wife or your boyfriend or girlfriend, though, frankly, coaching can sometimes help there. I can speak from some personal experience. But what I'm talking about is clients and colleagues, for example, people whom you might not manage, you know, quote unquote, but with whom you work to achieve things. And we're going to look at how coaching conversations with them will help you both succeed. Okay, so let's start with a bit of reflection. For those of you who did download the handouts or receive them in the email, you can turn to page one. And if you didn't download the handouts, you can either quickly click on that file share button in the top left, or if you want, just take a piece of paper, divide it into two columns, and label the first column what I liked, and the second column how I felt. Okay, so the first thing I'm going to ask you to do is look at that piece of paper. Think of a leader you liked. Go ahead and close your eyes for just a moment. We're on a webinar. No one's going to see you. Think about that great leader that you've worked with, that leader you admired. Maybe they were a mentor in your firm. Maybe they were a managing partner when you were junior. Maybe they were a law school prof. Think about someone that you've really admired who was a leader in your life. Now take a minute. We're going to go silent for a minute and jot down in the first column what you liked about that person. Go ahead and do that now. Okay, hopefully you've had a moment to write one or two things down. And now in that second column, take a moment to write how they made you feel. And again, think back to that time. Imagine that person. How did they make you feel? Jot down one or two things in that column. Okay, hopefully I had a minute to write down one or two things there. Now then, let's think about the opposite. If you're using a blank piece of paper, please take out another sheet and, again, just put two columns. This time you're going to label them what didn't you like and how they made you feel. Okay, so let's, again, think back to a time where you've had a leader in your life, and, again, maybe it's a mentor, in this case maybe not a good one, or a professor, or a colleague, or a boss. And they were the kind of person that no matter what they were paid, it was probably too much. Okay? You wanted to help them find a job in a competing firm, right? Like someone like that, someone you've worked with that you just, they weren't a good leader. And in that first column now, again, take a moment, close your eyes, and think about what they were like. Describe that person for me. Write down a couple adjectives. And now it's probably obvious where we're going with this. Jump to the next column. And again, think back to that time about how they made you feel and describe some of those feelings in the second column. Okay, hopefully you've all had a chance to do a little bit of this. Now, my proposal to you is that when you look at the two lists, you're going to know in your heart what great leadership is. Right? For the good leader, you've likely written down things like, they were inspiring, they challenged me, or they helped me find my way. Maybe you mentioned respect, or that they gave good feedback. I'm willing to bet most of you didn't write things like they paid me well or they gave big bonuses. In the case of, you know, that other guy, you may have written things like they made me feel small, they criticized, they didn't help, or they were a bully. I've had clients say things like I was bored working for them, they micromanaged me, or they were perfectionists. The key here, when we look at the lists under our two types of leaders, we know in our hearts what great leadership looks like. An effective leader builds a relationship. So one of the reminders for us when we're in a situation where someone else is frustrating us or challenging us is to take just a moment and think back to the leaders we admired. Think about what we liked about them, and that's often enough to guide us through some of those frustrating situations. One of the things coaching does, and we're going to get into in a few moments, is to help other people come back to that point of memory and apply it for themselves in those difficult situations. Okay, so we are getting to the coaching. Bear with me. Coaching may seem like a new idea to many people. I know I've found that, particularly here in Manitoba, it's something that people have heard about, but it's new for them. You decided to join us today, so hopefully if it is a new idea for you, then your curiosity at least sparked you to want to know more. One reason for coaching kind of seeming new is that societal values have changed dramatically in the last number of decades, and our leadership practices have been scrambling a little bit to catch up. This type of change is epitomized, for example, in the dramatic shift in child-rearing practices. We've seen more change there than we've seen in organizations. If you think back, really, modern parents really spend endless hours negotiating with their children, whereas their own parents and certainly their grandparents would have been more directive. Some of you have maybe been amazed watching your own children raise your grandchildren, or your parents might be a bit bemused watching you start to negotiate with your own kids. Management practices in the organizations have evolved to a small degree, but they've not kept pace with that sort of change that's happening in society. Remarkably little has changed when it comes to the basics of management. Most leaders tend to gravitate to an area on the continuum, usually without much thought or intention. They don't consciously choose their leadership style. Instead, their leadership style is kind of defined over time and by patterns of action. So, again, when I'm talking about leadership, I'm not just talking about people who report to us. To be a leader and to strengthen your leadership skills, think broadly about where you are or where you can be a leader in the organization. Right? So when are you modeling leadership with colleagues? Are you a leader in the courtroom? Are you a leader with other lawyers in the firm? Are you helping your peers and your staff to be the best they can be and to join you in your goals? And would you like to? Interestingly, you know, some management gurus first kind of talked about the various approaches to leadership, one of which I'll call laissez-faire, one of which they call autocratic, and one of which we call collaborative. They started talking about these back in like the 50s and really only expanded on those original writings a little bit in the 70s. That's 40 years ago. And they noted then that the work environments that seemed to function best were those in which there was the most felt and expressed control and influence. So if employees want control and influence in their work environments, which one of these management styles is best, and how does coaching fit into all this? Let's take a quick look at the three. Laissez-faire. What does this look like? This is, you know, where a leader is kind of hands-off or absent. And sometimes we see the laissez-faire leader with really good intentions. Many people who are leaders in their organization adopt that style of leadership with their high-performing employees or their high-performing colleagues. They think that high performers don't need managing. If you ask who has control or influence in this system, it would tend to be the employees, since the leader seems to be abdicating some of that. However, if you ask the employees, those same employees, how much control or influence they feel they have, they quickly say things like, I'm not sure how I'm performing, there's no feedback, or there's no clear sense of direction, so I hope I've been working on the right things, or I feel like I'm drifting along and no one's really paying attention. Over time, it seems that when employees are given that sort of latitude, and they tend to feel untethered and ungrounded. Okay, so the second style here, autocratic, what does that look like? That's, you know, that's the classic highly directive leader who issues orders and commands and whose guidance seems to suggest it's my way or the highway. In that situation, obviously, the leader is the one with the influence and control, and employees feel like they have very little of it, if they have any at all. I guess the interesting thing with this one is that it tends to promote compliance rather than commitment. So people go along with it because they have to, not because they're really committed to the success that we were talking about earlier. In this case, people often stop bringing forth good ideas and new ways of thinking about things because they know they're going to be shunned or they're going to be overlooked. So the final version, collaborative here, frankly, in virtually every dimension of Western life outside of business, there's been a big shift towards, away from autocratic and towards more collaborative interactions. That's obviously true in marriages and parenting and education and even in, you know, our political processes. So what does collaborative leadership look like? Why does it work? I'd say you could conjure up the image of a leader working alongside their employees, really kind of genuinely focused on solving problems together. Leaders and employees tend to partner together. There's no threats of power. There's no need to use hierarchy to influence decisions. In this system, both leaders and employees have some influence and some ownership. It tends to work well. So, you know, the obvious question might be, well, then why after 40 years do some people still have the autocratic style? And why do some people still use laissez-faire style? And why do we see, you know, relatively little of a collaborative style? And I would argue that it's because this one requires the greatest effort. Frankly, this one requires the healthiest egos. Okay? So coaching is the practice that makes the collaborative leadership style work most easily and efficiently. Right? So we're going to apply that now. Okay. So I want to take a little pulse test here. Just skip through this and do a little bit of a poll in a moment. Going to make sure everyone's still with us here. So when you think about working with colleagues, managing staff, maybe not in that boss role, but kind of more as the leader of the tribe, how do you feel about tackling collaborative leadership, about that idea of moving to a style where teams and leaders are engaged together? I'm going to ask Melissa to put up a little poll, and here it, we're going to ask you, how do you feel about that style?
And then I couldn't get any sound, so I read the second half of the instructions.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we've got someone chatting. If you could just hit mute by *6 on your phone. And Melissa has now put up the poll. So if everyone could just take a minute and let us know. How do you feel about collaboration? Do you do it now and it's great? It means giving up control. Sounds like a lot of work, could be an opportunity, or it will be a real challenge. Okay, and Melissa, it looks like folks have maybe slowed down in their voting now. Oh, we got a couple more here. Okay, so Melissa, are you able to broadcast the results, or are we broadcasting them now? Okay, they're broadcast. Great. So as you can see, a lot of you feel that this could be a real opportunity to improve the workplace. Some of you have indicated you're doing it now, and it's great. That's good to hear. And a few folks have said, you know, this will be a challenge to get others engaged in this style. So that's, you know, it's pretty typical of what we see when we do these sort of pools. It's encouraging to see so many of you, of course, feel that there's a real opportunity here. We often see that there's not that many who say it really is the style of my workplace right now. And, you know, it's good to be honest that there's probably some workplaces where this is going to be a real challenge. So I'm going to do my best to show you how we're going to really capitalize on this opportunity. And for those of you who feel it's going to be a challenge, I think I've got some tips and tricks for you as well. So, Melissa, thank you. If you could pull the poll down. Now then, I'm just going to fly through here. Okay. So, what is coaching? Coaching means having conversations with someone, using questions to help them explore new ways of looking at things to achieve goals that they are looking to achieve. Okay, it's bringing awareness and helping them be intentional and purposeful. Now, that all sounds good, and it probably sounds a little hippie-like to some of you, so I'm going to dive in and see if I can make this a little more real for you. Okay, so first of all, it's that idea of using questions to explore potential. So the key there is that we're using questions. We're not telling people what to do when we coach them. We're using questions to explore with them some ideas. That means we're using open questions, not closed. Questions that ask them to give us an answer that isn't yes or no. Pardon me. We're also trying to stay curiosity-based, which means that we're asking our questions not in an accusatory way, but really in a mode of really wanting to know why, really being curious to understand more about the other person. We're also using some deep listening. We're trying to find that person's motivation, which means we're listening to their words, we're listening to their emotions, we're listening also to what they're not saying. Coaching is also critically important, confidential, and based on trust. If you don't have a trusting situation with someone, it's going to be very hard to have a coaching conversation with them. And if that trust has been broken because confidence has been broken, that's going to be even worse. So be aware of that as we go into talking about coaching. And then finally, the goal of coaching is to help someone to learn, but it's not to teach them. And that there's a subtle nuance there. It's not telling them what to do, but it's giving them to examine what they're doing in light of their own intentions and learn what they want to achieve. Okay? Sounds kind of deep, but we're going to get into it in a little more detail. So first of all, those open-ended questions. That would be things like, how do you feel about X? What did you do when Y happened or Z happened? They're imaginative types of questions, so you're helping the person imagine a future. Tell me about a time that you did this. Or what would it look like if you were able to succeed at this problem? What would change? When I say directive in the next bullet, that's not telling them what to do, but it's using statements and questions like, tell me more about what happened when that occurred. Or talk more about this so I can understand it better. Using active listening and paraphrasing and summarizing, I'm sure, is something that many of you in your role as lawyers already do a fair bit of. Things like, so what I think I hear you saying is this. So here's what I'm seeing. Let me see if we have the same understanding. And then giving feedback isn't so much saying, I think you're right, I think you're wrong. In coaching, feedback sounds like, what would you do differently next time? Or what are you most pleased about the way this turned out? And then we always conclude our coaching conversations with action planning. So that would be things, again, we're using questions to help guide the person in their action planning. So it would be, so how are you going to use the insight you gained today? Or what do you want to do first towards this goal? Or, you know, when are you committing to yourself to have this completed? So helping them guide along. Okay, so those are the types of questions that we're talking about. Now, before we get too far into it, I do want to be clear about the differences. What isn't coaching? Coaching isn't any of these things. Mentoring. Mentoring is really about the mentor's experience. I'm sure many of you have had a mentoring relationship where you're the mentor or you're the protege, and it's all about the mentor sharing with the protege what it was like for them to go through something similar in their career and sharing how they handled it and how it worked out. Coaching is more about the individual than about the mentor. Training, of course, is about predetermined content, right? That's what we're doing today. I'm doing kind of an online workshop. It's a training format where I'm talking about some content that I know about and I'm sharing it with you. It's not as engaging. Counseling, people sometimes when they hear I'm an executive coach, they think, oh, you know, like you're a high-paid counselor for executives. Counseling is really about, you know, resolving stuff in the past and getting over it. Coaching is really focused on the future. Coaching is about where do you want to be and why aren't you there? Let's get you there. And then consulting, of course, is bringing in someone with specific expertise to help solve a particular problem. They're going to come in. They're not going to help you figure out the best way for you to fix this problem. They're going to tell you their best ways for solving it and suggest that you do it. All of those things are really valuable in a workplace, and you've probably seen all of them used in your practice at some point in time. At the right time, each one of those is ideal. Coaching, I would argue, is almost always right because it captures some of these things, but it helps the individual figure out their own solution to their own challenges. Now, it's not always a panacea. Sometimes these other ones really have a role, okay? But that's the difference. Coaching is really forward-focused, and it's about the individual you're working with. It's not about you. Okay, so we're at the point in this demonstration where I'm going to do a little bit of a demonstration of a coaching conversation. It's going to take about 5 minutes. Those of you who aren't part of the coaching conversation get to listen in, and I'm going to put up a slide to give you a few tips to listen for. What I want to do first, though, and I kind of cover my butt here with this and say, this is going to be a 5-minute conversation. So I'm going to ask for a volunteer to step forward who's got an issue they want to work on, something in the workplace that they would like to fix or they want to get better at. We're not necessarily going to solve that problem in 5 minutes. A typical coaching conversation would be 30 to 60 minutes. We'd normally have a coaching conversation every couple of weeks. What I'm doing, though, is modeling the type of conversation to give you a sense of what it looks like so that you're able to use this type of thing in your workplace. We're not trying to certify you as an executive coach or a coach for lawyers, but we want to give you a little example. So I'm going to model some of the coaching behavior for about 5 minutes. If we get to somewhere where we've maybe helped that person deal with that problem a little more, come up with a few solutions, that'll be gravy. That's great. But the goal is really to help you see how we can start to work towards that goal, and hopefully within 5 minutes you'll see that we're making some progress. So is there anyone who would like to volunteer? If you want to speak up, press *6 to unmute your line, or you can always type in the chat box and say that you'd like to volunteer. Okay. Looks like there's a lot of shy people out there, Melissa.
I'd be happy to volunteer.
Okay, that's great.
Anyone, I think I do realize, though, you should press *7 to unmute your phone, not *6. I apologize. So if anyone else wants to take it over me, please do. Not that I don't need it. Okay, everyone is being shy, so I'm more than happy.
Okay. Well, thanks, Melissa. I appreciate you stepping forward. And we're going to just ask folks to listen for some of this. So, Melissa, what I want to emphasize is when I do coaching, whether it's in a – well, it's almost never in a public setting like this. It's usually a confidential setting for the client. So I really appreciate you stepping forward and being willing to you know, chat about something in front of the group. What I want to emphasize for the group is that you and I didn't script this ahead of time. I flagged ahead of time that if no one volunteers, I might need you to step forward, but we didn't plan out ahead of time what we're going to talk about.
That's right.
Okay. So, again, I do appreciate you stepping forward. Do you want to give me some sense of what you'd like to work on today?
I probably think, and I think Stacey Nagel, our executive director, is on the call as well. My probably biggest challenge is decision-making, I would think.
Hmm. Okay. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Sometimes I'll go to make a decision and I'll second guess it and I'll decide to ask other people when really it's probably a decision that I could be made on my own. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Sure. I think I understand it. So what would be helpful to you today if we were to achieve some success on that challenge? What would it look like?
Meaning, like, what do I want out of it?
Yeah, is it as simple as, it's obviously not simple, but is it something like, you know, you're making more decisions without consulting, or what does it actually look like?
Yeah, I think that's exactly what I need, just to be able to make the decisions on my own without second-guessing and having to go to other people.
Okay. What is it that bothers you the most about second-guessing?
Well, obviously, it makes the decision process a lot longer because, you know, I've made the decision and then I've decided, well, maybe that's not the right decision. So definitely makes decision-making longer and also makes me doubt the decision that I've made when most times it's probably a good one, but just the second-guessing kind of, you know, makes you take a step back and say, well, was that the right decision? So certainly, yeah.
So you mentioned that most times your decision was probably the right one.
I mean, maybe I'm being a little, thinking that. But I do always, you know, not always, but there are times when I'm, you know, I've thought about it for quite some time. Okay, this is the right decision, and then sort of thought, was it? Was it really the right decision? So. Maybe just overthinking it probably has a lot to do with it as well.
Okay, so maybe there's a root there of overthinking and kind of coming back and reviewing these decisions.
Right.
Has it had an impact for you? What sort of impact has it had in your work environment?
I think just sometimes, you know, there's other people in the office that are, you know, quite busy, just as busy as me, more busy than I am, and it also affects them, I guess, too, if I'm constantly going in and saying, should I do this? Was this the right decision? So I think that certainly can affect other people as well.
Okay. Have you had any feedback on that?
Not necessarily. I think for the most part, I've, you know, after a long process, I've, you know, made the right decision. You know, of course, I work with a lot of volunteers in our association, so I always want to just make sure I make the right decision for them as well, too. And there has been times where I've maybe thought too quickly and not made the right decision, but normally there is time to change it, so that's no problem. So there has been, you know, it has been issues sometimes where I have thought that it's the right decision and it might not always be. But luckily, it's usually always been at a time where I can correct that decision and fix it. So,
Is there an area of your life where you feel you don't do this second guessing?
I would probably say more so. I do a little bit less second guessing at work than I do in my personal life, but I have issues with decision making throughout my throughout my personal and public and professional life too. So maybe a little bit less at the office sometimes, but I also have a little bit more time, I think, to think about that decision at the office as opposed to you know, at home with my family and they want an answer now and with little kids. So I think as long as I have a little bit of time to just sort of see all aspects of it and see who I'm affecting and what's the best solution for them as well as for myself and for the association, then usually I do better here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think I do have issues with pleasing. I'm a people pleaser, so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. It sounds, you've mentioned when you were talking about second-guessing these decisions, often what I'm hearing you talk about is how it's impacting other people. What
right.
effect my decision's having on others. Yeah. And yet I heard you say that you don't get a lot of feedback that this has been a problem.
No.
Right. Okay. Is it possible that this is more of a challenge for you in your mind than for others?
Probably most definitely, yes.
Yeah. Okay. If I was to say on a scale of 1 to 10, how good are you generally at making decisions in the sense of, you know, do you make the right decisions? At the end of the day, do you feel like it turned out okay? How good would you say you are?
I would probably say a 7 to an 8.
7 to an 8, which is pretty high. That's
yeah,
good.
It's just that in-between process of second-guessing, and then for the times that those two or three, when it doesn't work out, it's probably, I'm also one of those people who's probably more harder on myself than anybody else would be. So, yeah,
mm-hmm.
So that has a lot to do with it, too, I think.
That's interesting
After.
That you bring up being harder on yourself. Is it possible for you to imagine that this is just your process? And it's okay as your process.
Talking about it with you right now, yeah, I would easily say that's probably it's me.
and that's okay. Is that part okay as well? To say
I think so.
That's just me and that's okay?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, if I am hard on myself, it's not okay all the time, but I can let the odd mistake go.
Mm-hmm. We'll wrap up quickly because this is a five-minute demo, but
yep.
What I would offer you, Melissa, is I often kind of leave, in my case, clients or, you know, in your case, if you're coaching someone, a colleague or something, leave them with a little food for thought, a little something to work on for the next one. And my suggestion would be for you to just jot down and at the end of each day, just before you leave your desk, go home at the end of the day, think for a moment about what decisions you made.
Okay.
And what your comfort level is with them, and jot it down.
Okay.
And see if you're able to then leave that behind by writing it down and leaving it. And the second idea is then, you know, sometime later, look back on those notes and just see if it still seems important.
Gotcha. Okay.
Just an idea. If we were actually in an ongoing, you know, we were working together as colleagues and I was going to have this coaching conversation with you, or if you were my client and we were getting together on a regular basis, that's the sort of thing I'd come back to then, because I would be really curious to hear if you're able to begin to look back and say, you know what, that stuff I worried about, it actually, there was not a lot to worry about.
Right.
Or you may come back and say, yeah, actually, that was a very valid thing I was doing. Second guessing, reassessing.
Right. No, that's a great,
okay.
great tip. Thank you.
Well, Melissa, thank you for doing that. That was very brave to get up in front of a group of your peers and your colleagues here with the association and have that sort of conversation. So I really appreciate it. Now, I'll turn to the group. I'm not going to ask you all to answer because it would be cacophony on the phone, I guess. But I'm hoping that you were able to hear some of the principles of a coaching example, a coaching conversation. At the start, the goal was to seek understanding. What are we going to achieve? And the goal there was to understand what Melissa wanted to achieve. What would success look like for her? And then begin to work towards it. Using curiosity-based questions. So there was one or two times that I used a yes or no question to get clarity from Melissa. But otherwise, most of the questions, you almost could have prefaced them with, Melissa, I'm really curious about X, Y, or Z. My goal was in having those conversations was to understand better where Melissa was coming from and to provoke Melissa to look at the situation from angles she maybe hasn't looked at it from before. All while working towards, positively, towards a plan, figuring out, you know, what the next step is. and then having a little bit of goal setting at the end. So like I said, that was a 5-minute example, and you can have 5-minute coaching conversations. We just did. But, you know, normally we'd take a little more time than that and maybe work towards a deeper goal. But in this case, you know, hopefully Melissa has an opportunity to actually try that out, and it may actually have been a goal that will help slide forward a little bit. So that was just a quick example. So, you know, some of you might be thinking, and hopefully by now it's starting to clear up, but why coach your colleagues or your team? Well, the goal is here that, you know, as we talked about what motivates people, no one is successful on their own nowadays in a work environment. We all rely on others to help us out. As well, one thing I'll point out with coaching in particular, you know, there was a kind of a massive study done in the U.S. recently that compared training alone, so training a group of people in an office on behaviors, to coaching and training together. And they found that with the training alone, the productivity and the change behavior was about 23% of the group. Whereas with training and coaching, whether that was a professional coach or being coached by colleagues in the office, that productivity and that change behavior went up to 88% of the group. It was a massive change. So coaching others is, you know, in many ways a selfless contribution, but I propose that it really brings success back to you as well. It brings a more enjoyable work environment. It brings more success to the team. It brings more success to the firm. That, of course, leads to profit. It enhances teamwork. It builds collaboration. And my suggestion is that professional coaching for you or the people on your team can take that even further. It can go a little deeper. And I'll suggest that coaching your clients, if they are willing to hear you out and willing to participate, can really help build value for you as a lawyer. Helping your client to achieve their goals while, of course, guiding them within the law and giving them legal counsel has the potential to set you apart and to differentiate your brand from others in your particular field of law. Okay? It really does build up that success, and it leaves people feeling great about the person who helped them get there. At the same time, as I says here, it increases self-awareness and self-directed success, and it really helps people build accountability and commitment. So whether that's within your firm or, you know, as I say, with your clients, they can feel really good about that. Okay. So if you're going to dive into these sort of question-based conversations, one suggestion first is really to get to know the people you're going to coach. And if that's going to be your team, your colleagues, the receptionist who works for you, to coach them, it really helps to get a sense of their personality, their type, their drive, so that you can dive in a little bit with them. What we're doing here, you know, we're not trying to make you a certified executive coach. Let's be clear about that, or a certified legal coach. My team and I at Patrick Coaching Consulting all have master's certificates specifically in leadership coaching and executive coaching. We all hold certification with the International Coach Federation. You know, that requires hundreds of hours of education, one-on-one experience, ongoing assessments with master coaches, all that sort of stuff. That's not what I'm trying to do here, of course. What I should say, though, while I'm on that note, maybe, is if you are going to be looking for a coach for yourself or someone on your team, a professional coach, be aware that there are many people in the marketplace who will call themselves a coach, a leadership coach, an executive coach, a career coach, who do not have that master's level training and are not certified by the International Coach Federation. Okay? Be aware that coaching isn't a highly regulated industry yet. And so beware, if you're going out there to hire a coach for yourself, make sure that they hold those credentials. Okay, make sure that they hold credentials from the International Coach Federation before you start paying them for that service. Okay, so off that tangent. Today's workshop was to help you start to have coach-like conversations and to inspire and motivate your colleagues, your associates, your staff, your team. So to start you moving towards coaching conversations. It helps if you're going to do that, as I said, to get a sense of their type and their drive. And so you need to start listening for those people's motivators. Now, I've provided you with a takeaway in that handout, and again, the handout's available in the top left corner. I've given you part of that, as part of that handout, a guide to help you think about the motivators of people around you. So if you didn't receive the handout, by all means download it or contact me or Melissa. I'm not going to go through that in detail right now, but I'm going to leave that with you as a tool you can take away. And it's going to help you explore some of that meaning and purpose. What do you think drives people? It helps you sort of be involved. It helps you, you know, how do they use their talent? Figure out what helps them belong in the workplace. Where do they feel pride? How do they feel appreciated? And what I would propose is that the areas where you don't know or you're really not sure, those are great areas for curiosity-based questions if you're going to start having a coach conversation, okay? The thing to remember, though, is before you decide, you know, Mary out there in the outer office needs coaching, it really needs to be up to Mary to decide that she would like to engage with you in that type of conversation. So it means saying to her, hey, I've been hearing a little bit about this idea of coaching. I've seen a little bit of how it works. I'm not a professional coach, but I'd like to explore using a coach conversation a little bit, and I'm wondering if you'd be willing to explore with me. Would you be able to go for a coffee with me for 10 or 15 minutes and chat about something? And presumably you've probably got something in mind that you'd like to see Mary maybe working on, so you might want to explore that a little bit with Mary and see if Mary's willing to talk about it with you. It's particularly important if this person is someone, you know, working with you, a colleague, that you want to make sure you're helping them. So the idea is to really explore with them where would they like to work on something. And it doesn't have to be an awkward or a difficult conversation. You know, with Melissa, for example, who very bravely stepped forward and volunteered today, I said to her, hey, there might not be anybody who's comfortable stepping forward, so give a few minutes of something you'd like to work on in the workplace, and if it comes to it and you decide to step forward, then we'll chat about whatever that is. And, you know, that opened the door. That allowed that to happen. So it's an idea. So I do want to just flag a couple things, though. When you're trying to think about those people you want to work with and who maybe would appreciate some coaching and might be open to you offering it, I want to point out a couple of coaching traps. First of all, remedial or last resort. This is when someone you manage isn't working out and you're about to fire them, and you decide maybe I should give them some coaching as one last chance. If you're that close to the end of the game for that person, coaching probably isn't the solution. At that point, it probably needs to be more directive than coaching. Coaching is about exploring ideas and getting better at something we are already good at and we want to excel at, okay? Second coaching trap is where you fall into that expert role or you become the problem solver. So you're having what starts out as a really good coaching conversation, and all of a sudden you notice that you're actually telling the person how to solve their problem, how to fix it. When I was your age, this is what I did. Okay, that's the expert role, that's the mentor, that's the problem solver, and that's not coaching. That might be useful, but it's not coaching. The third trap is falling into your own agenda, and that's where I was kind of dancing around a minute ago with, if you're going to explore with Mary whether or not to have some coaching, it's not about going in to fix what you think needs to be fixed with Mary. It's really about opening the door for her to see if there's things she'd like to work on that maybe you can help with. Now, if Mary's reporting to you in the workplace and there are issues that you've had a conversation with Mary about that, you know, she needs to work on some things, then you can float the idea that, is that something you want to work on, Mary? And if it becomes her agenda that, yeah, actually I do want to get better at that, I know I need to, and I'd welcome you helping me with it, then that's okay. The fourth trap is kind of no agenda, really saying, let's go have a coaching conversation and not knowing where you're going to go. Not starting that conversation as I did with, so Melissa, what would you like to achieve today? What would you like to work on? And finally, a coaching trap is really not being clear on your own beliefs or your own biases. If you've got a strong feeling about someone or about a particular situation, if you really feel a strong sense of ethics around something that someone's coaching, that someone's talking to you about in a coaching conversation, if you're not able to acknowledge that you've got that strong sense and sort of put it out there, that's going to be a challenge in coaching, because that's going to drive you towards telling them what to do or sharing your opinion a lot. So we have to be able to put those biases on the table. In my experience working with lawyers is that oftentimes you're very conscious of this. You're very aware of this, given the work that you do with your clients. So hopefully that's not too big a challenge, but it may be. So be aware of it. So this is where I'm going to jump into another quick quiz just to keep everyone a little bit engaged. And Melissa, if you could put it up there, and we're just going to ask people, what one do you think of those five is the biggest risk for you? So what's the biggest challenge if you were going to have coaching conversations? You're fearful that you'll be the expert. You're worried that you're going to want to use this for people you're about to fire. You're going to come into it with your own agenda, no agenda, or that maybe you're not clear in your own biases. Maybe you're not clear in your own beliefs, and you're a little worried that'll have a negative influence. Okay, we'll just take another moment. If you haven't voted, please do so. Okay, so thank you. Melissa, if you could show the results to people. Oh, it's up. Okay. Sorry, folks, I can't always tell us what I'm seeing, you're seeing. So, we got an interesting split, but, of course, the big one people have highlighted is, you know, I'm worried I'm going to fall into that expert role in problem solving. And that's really the number one risk as far as I'm concerned, especially for those of us who are professionals who tend to be in a role where we give advice and guidance. When I first started training to be a leadership coach, I'd left my career and I'd become a bit of a consultant. And frankly, my whole life, my professional life, was spent giving advice to cabinet ministers and senior government leaders. That's what I did. I was good at it. And so I was very fearful that becoming a coach, it was going to be difficult. And you know what? I was right. It was difficult. There are times that I still want to just tell people, do it this way. It'll be so much easier. So it's great that you're very aware of that many of you have flagged that would be a challenge. And I think, you know, this is one of those situations where awareness is key. As long as you're aware that that's not coaching, and if you're really desiring to try using coaching to see if it makes more of a difference than the problem solving that you've been doing previously, then you'll be aware of it and you'll bring it forward. Some folks also identified that remedial last resort, and hopefully today's seminar reminds you that at that point, when you're really that close to terminating employment for someone or they're on their last legs, you may get them back to a point where they need coaching, but you're probably not going to do that with coaching. Instead, you're going to make it very clear to them what your expectations are and where they're not living up to them, or at least hopefully you're making that very clear to them. And then once they kind of get themselves back with any luck into the good graces a little bit, then we can start to have a coaching conversation about now how do we help them really excel again. The idea of coming in with your agenda or no agenda, that's really, again, one of awareness. And what I encourage you to do is be conscious of that right up front when you go approach someone. Say, look, we had this workshop on coaching. It was kind of a high-level overview. It was a quick conversation, but there were some ideas that I'd like to explore. Would you be willing to try a coaching conversation with me? It means you coming to me with something you'd like to work on in the workplace and me seeing if I can help you explore new ways to solve it. Saying something like that to people is often a joy for them. They're, so often you're going to find that your colleagues in the workplace, it may be a little odd at first if this isn't the sort of thing they've heard from you previously, but they're probably going to be thrilled to hear that someone cares and someone actually wants to help them solve a problem. We've all got problems and challenges in the workplace. And, more often than not, it's a very positive response. Okay, so if the poll's still up, we can take it down. Melissa, thank you. So just a few last thoughts to think about as we kind of wind up here before we open the floor to questions. A few things to think about. So being a leader, these are rhetorical questions. Does a great lawyer make a great leader? Does becoming partner provide you with people management skills? Are you leading wherever you can, or are you relying on a formal hierarchy? And where do you turn when you're unsure about leadership? They're rhetorical questions, but hopefully they feel like very real questions because, you know, I work with a lot of people, not just lawyers, but a lot of people in other fields, who rise to a level of success because they're good at something. And now all of a sudden they're not doing that anymore. Now they're managing people. And that hasn't been their forte, and it maybe isn't what they're comfortable with. And yet they got there because it was the pinnacle, right? You were a really good salesperson, and now you're the director of sales. You're not actually doing any selling. You're managing a team of salespeople, and you've never managed a team of people before. Or, you know, you were particularly successful in your law practice, and now you're hiring people and finding you're spending more time managing those people than actually practicing the law. Or you've taken on the role of managing partner in your firm, and, you know, that was a somewhat political process, perhaps. It was a mark of success. And now you're spending actually a lot of time, quote-unquote, managing your colleagues rather than doing what you love doing that got you here. And that's a key area where people really often benefit from coaching. Any time that someone is beginning to find that they're relying more on the formal chains of hierarchy and they're not demonstrating their own leadership that they have inside them, or when you find that you don't have anyone you can turn to about building your own leadership, or when you're in that role where you are, you know, in a leadership role and there's some struggles, there's some challenges that maybe you've never managed people before and now all of a sudden that seems like all you do is manage people and you'd like a little help with that. That's a great area where all of a sudden you can start to look at yourself as the potential client rather than looking at yourself as the one having that coaching conversation. And so the last thing I really want to do is make an offer to you guys. Normally, the way we do coaching in my firm is by term. We don't bill by the minute or by the hour. We engage our clients for 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, 12 months, whatever they want. And we're kind of on retainer to them. We have a fixed period. We meet on a regular basis. So normally I don't, you know, sell an hour of coaching to someone or whatever. But what I am going to do this time is offer a complimentary coaching session just to the participants on the webinar, those of you who joined us today, to have kind of a 30-minute coaching conversation by phone to help you explore whatever you want. It's up to you. This actually may not be an opportunity for all of you. It may not be something that appeals to you. The half hour is going to be a chance for, you know, you to get to know me, but it's also a chance for me to get to know you and see if I can help you out a bit with 30 minutes of coaching. I do want to emphasize it's not a trick. There's no obligation. There's no fee involved. It's not something I'm making available to the general public, but it is there because, you know, I really do believe that coaching benefits the workplace all the time, that there's always an opportunity. And so, you know, if some of you find in that session that I am really helpful or that we do really hit it off and you achieve great things, well, then maybe you do become a client and that's good for me and hopefully good for you. But that's not the goal. What I want to do here is be able to give that session that I offered as a, you know, 5-minute sample. I want to be able to start to spread the word about coaching in Manitoba. Like I said earlier in the conversation, it's not as well known here in Manitoba as it is. I have clients throughout North America. I have 5 coaching colleagues who work with me. They're all in other cities, and we kind of have this North American network under my firm. And we do find that coaching is a very much used tool in large centers throughout North America, but it's a little less so here. So I thought, you know, this would be a good opportunity to share the wealth a little bit and give an opportunity after Stacey and I chatted about me coming here and doing this. So if you're interested, that's our link on our website. That isn't a public link. It's, you know, it's not in the menu. So you have to type in that full padraig.ca/Manitoba Bar Association. Or, you know, by all means, send me an email or give me a call and say, hey, I was on that webinar where you talked at us for an hour, and now I want to have more of a two-way conversation and take you up on that offer, and I'd be happy to do that. So, having said that then, we're at the end of the formal part of the presentation. And Melissa, did you want to facilitate whether there's questions from the group?
No problem. Does anybody have any questions? If they do, you hit *7 to unmute your phone. And you can either ask over the phone or you can type it in the chat box. You can do it to everyone or you can do a personal question that we can answer. So it's *7 to unmute your phone if you have a question. Or you can type in the chat box if you'd like to. Oh, I did just get a question. Can you email? Yeah, no problem, Evelyn. We can. We will be putting up the slides, and we can send them out or put them behind the wall on our website, assuming that Patrick has no issues with that. But no problem. We can certainly do that.
Yeah, that's great. That's fine with me. And you'll send out that link then, too, if people want it.
For sure, yeah. I did receive a question by a private message. How do I start building the idea of coaching at my office?
Oh, great. Great question. Thank you for that, whoever sent it in. You know, I think really this is something that start chatting about it, start talking about it. Use this webinar today as a good way to start having the conversation. Tell people a bit about coaching. And, you know, when I refer to a coaching conversation, I'm talking about a conversation where you're not guiding it, you're using questions to draw out other people. I would encourage you to use a bit of a coaching conversation with some of your colleagues in the sense of saying, hey, I attended this webinar today on coaching. Have you heard of coaching? Do you know anyone who's used coaching? What are your thoughts on it? See what people think about coaching. See what some of those beliefs are about it. And that's a great way to start a conversation around it.
Great. Well, I see some people typing, whether they're just saying thanks or they're asking a question. We'll just give them a second. Or you can hit *7 to unmute your phone and do it over the phone. A question here from someone. How do you balance the need for different styles, coaching versus directive?
Okay. I guess, first of all, I'm going to make an assumption that the different styles of coaching questions, but rather the different styles in the workplace. And that's a really important question because as a leader, particularly if you're the formal leader, you're the boss of the people, you do need to balance those two things. And, you know, I like to make the differentiator that coaching is really good so long as the person is doing well, performing, and there's an opportunity to get better. I really see coaching as something that helps folks who are getting by to doing really well anywhere in that continuum really excel because it brings out the things that are barriers to them and helps figure out ways to get around them. Where coaching doesn't work so well is those folks who have really completely disengaged from the workplace or they're just angry and unhappy there. Some personal coaching might help them. But in the workplace, if they're not already committed a little bit to the workplace, if they're not interested in getting ahead, contributing more, being more of a team player, it's going to be tough to start with coaching. But as I alluded to earlier with, you know, the person who's kind of right at the end of that spectrum, that continuum, and they're maybe almost ready to fire them, a little more direction can sometimes help give them guidance and bring them back. And then, by all means, if they're kind of back in the fold and you're trying to now really help them step up, that's where I switch back into that coaching mode. Coaching works really well with anyone who wants to take ownership of their own career and maybe isn't succeeding as much as you think they can be.
Hopefully that answers that question. Great. Perfect. Any other questions out there? Either hit *7 to unmute or you can type it in. Oh, I think I see one more private message coming in. It says, let me see. I'd like to have a professional coach help me with some short-term gains. I don't think my office is going to be willing to pay for coaching for me. What would you suggest?
You know, there are That's a really good question that I should have been a little more prepared for. There are different types of coaches around who, you know, do a bit of pro bono work. I do pro bono work, of course, from time to time. But there's some coaching available through some community organizations, that sort of thing. I would start with Google, which is kind of a cop-out answer, but I would start with Google, first of all, and, you know, look up pro bono coaching or look up the particular type of coaching you're looking for. So if it's a particular focus on the legal field, or if it's leadership coaching, executive coaching, or, you know, what is generally referred to as life coaching, and see if you can find some alternatives if cost is a factor. And otherwise, of course, if it's more just a question of should it be done through the workplace or should it be done on your own, I really encourage people to consider short-term coaching. You know, maybe you don't want to get into it forever, but short-term coaching as a real career booster. So if it's something a person can afford and they know that they want to get somewhere, as an example, let me use a more concrete example so I'm not skating around here. I have clients who have hired me privately rather than through their company because they're looking for a career opportunity. They've got their eye on something they want to reach, whether it's a, you know, a promotion even in the company, or more likely, you know, in a couple of cases, they're the second in command. So they're the chief operating officer of a company. They're the chief financial officer of a company. They want to be the CEO, or they want to be a CEO. Or in your case, you know, they're a partner and they want to get to managing partner, and they know there's a few others who are in the running and they kind of want to take some ownership of this and get there themselves. They hire me or one of my colleagues privately so that we can help them really focus on them and their career as opposed to focusing on the broader, you know, the goals of the firm, for example. So, you know, there's different options out there if financing is a problem. And by all means, if it's more a question of being more about your goals than the firm's goals, think about doing a short-term session just on your own and see how it makes a difference.
Great. Oh, I see another question here. Are there other references, i.e. reading material, besides the book you mentioned that you can suggest we look to?
Thanks, Susan. I appreciate that question. And yes, there are. I don't have a whole list that I can read out to you right now, but I do have a couple really good examples that I've loved over the years. So why don't I commit that I'll send a very short bibliography, so I don't overwhelm you, to Melissa today or tomorrow and ask that she get that out to everyone. Would that be okay?
Sure. I'm totally fine with that.
Is that helpful, Susan?
Perfect. Okay. Yeah, I have no problem with that. We can send that.
Okay. Super.
Great.
I'll look
Any
forward to doing
questions
that.
Any other from
great.
Anybody? You can ask over the phone or you can type it in. That seems to be working well. Oh, I just see something here. Perfect. Well, I guess that ends today's session. Of course, as we said, we would be happy to send the slides to everybody. Probably what we'll do is post it behind the wall on our website, as well as the recording, the audio recording for today. Also, with a list of some other reading materials that Patrick will put together for us that will be gratefully appreciated. But, of course, any other questions about today, you can certainly contact Patrick at that email or phone number or use that link, or you can contact the MBA office and we can put you in contact with Patrick as well. So if there's no other questions, we will end today. Just a few minutes early, but no problem. You can finish your lunch. Thank you, Patrick, very much for coming to speaking with us today over webinar. I know it's kind of hard to sometimes do it while staring at your screen, but it was great, and we very much appreciate it.
Well, thank you for the invitation. I absolutely loved it.
Great. Well, thank you, everyone. Enjoy the rest of your day, and we will connect soon with the rest of that information.
Thanks, everyone. Have a good day.
Thank you.
Thank you. Please stand by.